So welcome everyone to Paradigm Shifters, and we have a very wonderful paradigm shifter, and he's been at shifting the paradigms for, I would say, a long time. Bernie Siegel, who wrote Love, Medicine, and Miracles many years ago, a surgeon who really got in touch with the incredible soul surgery that comes from love way back. And you've really opened a lot of people's hearts and minds. And oh my goodness, welcome to the show, Bernie.
Thank you. I think that what I've learned is, because Carl Jung said it this way, the future is unconsciously prepared long in advance and therefore can be guessed by clairvoyance. And I think that that's something I have really seen. How the choices I've made, the things I've done, it's like somebody wrote a script and you're just following it. But on the other hand, it was all written unconsciously. And it's so nice when we can understand what's going on, you know, through dreams, drawings, all kinds of things, and then know what's happening and why and make sense of it and let it become a part of your life that enhances your life.
Yeah, I think the last time we spoke was a lot about art therapy, interpreting the art of people. And that was really profound for a lot of us listening to you. That was great.
Well, one of the, you know, people in the book, Amelia Kincaid, I mean, she put a story in, but she's an animal intuitive.
Oh, right. Okay.
That I met, probably a decade or so ago. Out in California, we were both attending a Nun-Kill conference.
What kind of a conference?
Well, the Nun-Kill conference, the ASPCA.
Oh,
was having a conference about animals.
Oh.
You know, to stop, you know, like shelters and other places. Oh, well, there are too many here, so we'll kill them, you know, we euthanize them. And it was to help find homes for all these creatures. So I was out there as a speaker. And I met her in the elevator, and when she said she was an animal intuitive and communicated with animals, I thought that she's basically insane.
A little on the edge there, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, she's talking to all the creatures, and they don't talk. What do you, you know, it's like, what are you talking about? So what happened was, maybe a month or two later, one of our cats disappeared. We're in a wooded area in Connecticut. Somebody left the house door open. It was an indoor cat, and it's gone for a couple of weeks. I figured it's dead in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, what have I got to lose? So I emailed Amelia, and I said, all right, is the cat alive? Where is it? You know. And a day or two later, she emailed back. And this is without helping her with any communication at all. Because she said, do you have a photograph of the cat? I said, no, I don't have any of those things. She said, the cat's alive. I see the moon through its eyes. And then she described the house in detail, all the other pets that are there, who were scaring her because she was an indoor pet. And she said, which I thought was nuts again, the cat's under the house. Now, you know, my concept was, how do you get under a house? But the next morning, I went and stood in front of the garage screaming the cat's name. And all the other pets are looking at me like I'm insane. What are you standing here yelling for? And then I heard a cry, meow.
Aww.
And it was coming from under a stairway, which does go all the way down to the ground on both sides. And I realized she had saved her own life by squeezing under it. And it was like putting yourself in a cage so nobody could get to you.
Oh, what a smart kitty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little food, and we saved her life because she had lost quite a bit of weight. But
Where did you start? Haven't you had a lot of children, a lot of animals all the way along?
Oh, yeah, we go way back. I really think, you know, people may think I'm crazy, but I think it had to do with my past life, that why I became a surgeon, why I'm rescuing creatures, was that I had a destructive life as a knight, killing with a sword.
Oh.
And it, because our house, I mean, I was told that there were no zoning laws then. That's why the police didn't do anything. Because I've often said we broke every zoning law in town. They said, well, back then, you know, when the kids were younger, there weren't all the zoning laws they have now.
Right.
But we had, and this is an acre and a half, because people would say, oh, you live on a farm? No. You know, it's a normal house lot. And we had fences up around for ducks and geese and goats and dogs and cats outside.
And children.
In the house, we had all kinds of, well, from reptiles, because one of our kids loved herpetology. Mm. So he had a room full of snakes and chameleons climbing in a dead tree in his room so they could live up, you know, in an environment they were feeling safe in. And, you know, tanks in the other rooms. Oh, yeah, I had kiddie pools. All these memories come back in several rooms where turtles lived. And they, you know, had a shelf so they could climb up and then sit in artificial sunlight, because we had that in many rooms. So the animals, if they sat under the light, it was like they were out in the sun.
Aww.
And, you know, the veterinarians knew I was a doctor and had five kids, so, and that we were collecting, you know, not really collecting, but caring for. And so they would call me and say, you know, so-and-so has an exotic pet and they can't handle it. Would you take it? So I'd always say, yes. And, you know, and it became part of our family. That was the thing I found that was so interesting, that every creature had a name and they were family. So if they were running around the house, that was perfectly okay. I mean, I remember also before I'd go to the hospital, I'd get my shoes out of the closet and I'd look to see if there's any eggs in it. Because believe me, the turtles would walk around, climb into a shoe, and lay an egg. You know, maybe they felt it was a safe place for it.
Before we go any farther, I want to say that Bernie has this wonderful new book. It's called, remember we talked about Love, Medicine, and Miracles. Mm-hmm. He's got this one called Love, Animals, and Miracles. So a lot of people listening might say, oh my gosh, you live in a zoo. It would have made me crazy. But your whole premise in this book, through these little stories, which are so sweet and powerful, is that animals help us.
Yeah.
Right?
The word I came across in some writing by a clergyman said that the word good doesn't mean anything anymore. Referring to the Bible, everything God created, God saw was good. He said it should be complete. And that animals are complete and man is not. And I think that's the thing that I've learned. Mm. I was speaking the other night and I was reading several poems that are written about animals, and then one from Ann Landers in 1999 that came from some church publication. But hers said the same thing. Let me just say this. There's a poem called Rags, and I've named our dog after him because this is a dog. I'll make a long story short, not recite the whole poem, but you can look it up, Rags by Edmund Vincent Cook.
Rags?
Rags, R-A-G-S.
Okay.
And because it broke my heart to read it in a book of poetry of various sorts, and one section was animal poetry. But this man is in the army. The dog Rags has saved his life and that of many other soldiers, and they're all discharged, and he wants to take the dog home but can't find him. When he gets back, he goes back to medical school and walks into a room in which a dog is cut open on the table, and they're learning from this.
Oh, my.
And when he walks over, who do you think it is? It's his dog from the army, Rags.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow.
No, but what does the dog do? It licks his hand and then dies.
Oh, my gosh.
And he says, if there's no place in heaven, you know, for a creature like this, then I'll take my place in hell.
Wow.
And, you know, when I read that, I literally burst into tears.
Aww.
About that. But, you know,
well, you have another story in here where...
Add this for a minute, because as a doctor, I have operated on our pets when they've been injured and had problems. And they do the same thing to me. Hmm. They have licked my hand. You know, I'm working on their wound, and they turn their head and lick my hand. I know they're saying, that's hurting, that's hurting. They don't bite me. And that's why when I read that, it is so, you know, like a loving creature to do that. Not attack you, but just let you know, hey, give me a break. That hurts. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really amazing. You also have a story in here about an animal. I think it was a dog who hurt a little dog or something. I haven't got that one open right now, but there was a dog that bit or hurt another dog.
No, that was our rabbit. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We had a house rabbit and our dog Furphy, named after his fur. When I thought they had adjusted to each other, because you don't just bring in, you know, a strange animal and put it down. I thought they had adjusted to each other. So when I left the house, I realized I hadn't closed the pet door to separate them. But I thought, well, they know each other. You know, I've been there for a week or two. And when I came home, however, he had obviously grabbed her in his mouth and shook her like a, you know, stuffed toy. So she was wounded. And then a few weeks later, after taking care of her wounds and doing all kinds of things and feeling terrible that I had been the cause of this, I went out to bring her in because she's a rabbit who's out in the front yard, a house rabbit. But I didn't like her out when it would get dark in case some predator would jump the fence around the house or whatever. So I would go out to get her. And, of course, she didn't like to come in. So she would run around the yard. But that night I went out and I can't find her. I can't see her anywhere. And I'm getting anxious. And then I see Furphy lying there. And I walk over towards him and hiding behind him, you know, in his fur, she had cuddled against him.
Aww.
And so I couldn't see her. And that taught me forgiveness. You know, here's somebody who threatens her life with the way he treated her. And here they are, friends and buddies again, you know, a couple of weeks later. And I think, how would a person have acted if they had been wounded or beaten by somebody?
And
that's why I say they're just such wonderful teachers. But the Ann Landers poem has humor in it. But, I mean, some of the lines in it, if you can start the day without caffeine, get going without pet pills, resist complaining of boring people, your troubles, you don't treat a rich friend better than a poor friend, face the world without lies and deceit, can't get tension without medical help, relax without liquor, sleep without the aid of drugs, and say honestly that deep in your heart you have no prejudice against creed, color, religion, or politics, then, my friends, you're almost as good as your dog.
Aww.
And there's even more to it than I said.
And,
you know, and I usually say to people, you want to know how to behave, you need a role model. Let me read you this list, you know, and then they're all listening seriously until you get to, you're almost as good as your dog, and then they burst out laughing. But it is so true. And I always say, if you don't know how to behave, WWLD, what would Lassie do?
I love that. Also, in this book, I keep going back to stories in this book, and we can't go through every one of them, but every one of them has a lesson like that, something that
absolutely
touches you. I like the sparrow one, jumping around a little bit. And also the ones that come to people because of spirits whispering to someone who's left behind.
Yeah. The one that, obviously can't remember every one until you start telling me, then I get it again. But the one where a daughter wants to get her father a dog, and she goes down to, you know, a breeder and picks one out, but the breeder says, I'm sorry, that one's already been taken. So she goes home without a dog, and then she loses her life.
Right.
And a year or
tragically,
two later,
right?
Yeah, tragically. A year or two later, the parents go back to that same place to get a dog. And when they walk in, what I remember is this: the dogs aren't confined, but only one comes running across the room and leaps up on the father's chest. And the breeder says, that's the dog your daughter wanted for you.
For you, yeah.
But, you know, the people who adopted him returned him. They couldn't keep him. And you walk in and a year and a half later, and boom, he runs over and jumps up on your chest. And as I say, those are not accidents. That consciousness is there communicating.
Well, you know, on Facebook, there's all these like kitty videos and so on.
Oh, yeah.
But I've noticed recently that there's a proliferation of animals communicating some understanding or, you know, something very profound. And I thought, because we're accepting more and more of it, they're really speaking to us. And you've got a story in here. I don't know if you can remember it, if I can put my hand on it.
Well, let me tell you one while you're looking.
Okay.
Touched me. It happened with our grandson, Charlie. He had some turtles and, you know, in a tank, and one died, so another one is left all alone. He could see it's getting depressed, not eating, and he was worried about it. So he decided, even though it bothered him to do so, that he would get a little fish for it and drop it into the tank, and then that would excite the turtle, and he'd go and eat a fish and have a good meal. So they go, you know, to the pet store, bring a little fish home, and they drop it in the tank. And they're all waiting, you know, the family, to see this poor fish get eaten up. And what happens? The fish swims over to the turtle, and they rub noses. And they became friends, you know. And now he has a buddy. He's all cheered up. He starts eating again, and they share meals. I mean, you know, you sprinkle food in the tank, and they both go up and eat.
Aww.
And that's what's so incredible. And you hear more stories about creatures like that than you do about people.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Being kind.
There's also one here called Bear Mountain where it's written, you didn't write this, but a woman named Sonia did, and it's all as if she is the animal. I think it's a cat. Yeah, scratch behind my ears or my back, just above my tail. So he talks about being as if he talks from the perspective of the animal, and because we were talking about animal intuitives, I think it's a really interesting. Remember, and he went for a walk with this woman. He had a difficult owner. Then the owner put him in the hands of a woman that he called, She Who Loves, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
And then, I can't remember the details. Yeah.
Well, they kept walking in the mountain, he and this woman who he called She Who Loves.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stopped, he saw there were some bear cubs in the tree, and he was trying to protect the woman, and he didn't know how to get her attention. And I guess it was a dog, that's right. And she's saying, come on, let's go see the bear. Oh, they're so cute. And he could see the mama bear in the woods, and he's really scared, right? And so he talked to the woman through his eyes. He said, I stared at her until she would finally stop. She wanted me to move, and I wouldn't move. And she's saying, what's the matter with you? And then she looked around, and she saw the mama bear.
Yeah.
So do you remember that part now? And so she...
I don't remember the ending, but I remember the bears in the trees and...
Well, he communicated by staring into her eyes in such a way that she stopped, and they stood there in total immobility for 15 minutes while the mama bear took care of the babies, and they were fine.
But, yeah, and they're all reading each other.
Yeah, it's a brilliant story, isn't it?
Yeah, I know when I've been sick or other people, they'll tell me how their pets, you know, react and treat them differently. I mean, one of our cats would sit on my chest and purr if I were in bed not feeling well. If I were in bed taking a nap, she didn't waste her time sitting on my chest, you know, trying to heal me. And one man I know, when his father was very sick, he said the dog wouldn't leave the bedroom. He had to drag him outside to pee or poop.
Wow.
You know? He said I had to feed him in the bedroom. And then he said he came home from work one day and the dog was in the kitchen. And he knew his father was getting better, that the dog never would have left him if he weren't. And even in nursing homes, they see the same thing, that some pets will stay with the people who are not doing well, you know, and not going to survive, and they keep them company and help them. And it just becomes common knowledge to everybody working there when they see, you know, a cat or a dog just go in the room and lie down and just be there with the person.
You know what, talking about be there with the person, I love the story where you came in and found the one, I think, is a dog, and he had cancer, and you decided that you would probably have him euthanized, but you had a family council meeting. Do you remember this?
That I remember. Cause,
tell that one. It's
my
great.
Life, because our dog had developed a malignant melanoma. His name is Oscar. And and I took him to the vet because he wasn't doing well. And the vet said, I have never seen a dog this sick recover. I think while you're here, we should just euthanize him. And I said, wait a minute, I'm not going to go home and say to the kids, you know, we put Oscar to sleep. So I will call home to prepare them. And I called home, and I never forget one of our kids saying, you don't put your patients to sleep, you're not putting Oscar to sleep. So I said to the vet, I can't, they won't let me. And he looked at me like I'm nuts, but I brought him home. And all I can say is I loved him, thinking he's got a week or two to live. And by that, I mean, I massaged him. We shared breakfast before I went to the hospital. You know, I'd feed him with a spoon because he was too weak to eat. And I just spent a lot of time on the floor with him because he could hardly stand up. And after a couple of weeks, I noticed he's walking around. Why don't I let him outside with the other dogs? So in the morning, I'd let him go out. And he kept getting better and better. And he lived for over 3 years with no sign of the cancer coming back. It disappeared.
Wow.
And it blew the vet's mind. I mean, he would just keep shaking his head saying every time he'd see me, you know, out shopping or doing anything, he'd say, I never saw a dog that sick ever recover. But, well, one other, I don't know what I put in the book or what I didn't, but because
it doesn't matter because the stories are all wonderful.
Sent us stories, mm-hmm. and a lot of times I would comment with experiences I had, but some friends had a cat, and again, they were told the cat needs to be euthanized. They said, well, we'd rather have a die at home, so we'll come and get it. And the vet came out with his limp thing in his hands, just holding him in his two hands. And when the cat saw the family, he stood up on the vet's hands, jumped about 8 or 10 feet through the air onto the chest of the father. And the vet said, well, it was dying a few minutes ago.
What have you done,
Bernie?
And
it lived for several years, home with the family.
But isn't there a big lesson for all of us in this? Even in your surgery stories from early times, there's a huge lesson.
Yeah, it's when you love life. What I say to people now is love your life and love your body, and then amazing things can happen. Because there's a chemistry to that. See, even petting animals. Well, let me give you a statistic. You have a heart attack. Go home to a house with a dog. A year later, 5% of the people had died in the study. There was no dog in the house, 24% of the people had died.
Wow.
And it's not just dogs, you know, or pets. It's relationships with other living things.
Right.
As a matter of fact, in a study of people who lived to be 100, one of the factors out of four factors was a clan. They were part of a group.
Hmm.
You know, they had a purpose in their life.
And they belonged. They belonged.
But the clan was a big part of it. They ate reasonably healthy food, and they were active, you know. But a big part is really about the relationships and purpose, meaning. And the animals don't wake up doubting any of those things. And your chemistry has changed when you pet furry animals. Your bonding hormones increase. So
they've actually done studies on the hormone changes.
Oh, yeah. Anybody who has a pet. I mean, I noticed when two of our dogs died this year and I didn't have anybody to walk, I don't get conversations from a lot of people from walking alone. Hmm. But as soon as I get a dog and take it for a walk, boom, everybody's talking to me again, you know, about the dog, about me, about all kinds of things. And so, again, they break down a lot of barriers and connect people.
And it's really remarkable how they... there's a story about the sparrow. That's what I wanted to say. The sparrow.
Which one was that? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a woman. Let me see. She was very ill, and the sparrow kept coming and visiting her. Here it is. An elderly acupuncture client of mine rescued two baby sparrows, and she hand-reared them. The male sparrow flew off and ended up living in the garden in the surrounding area. When the woman was sitting at the bus stop, the male sparrow would show up and they would have a chat. But the female sparrow chose to continue to live in the house with the woman. Anyway, this woman had awful leg ulcers and no treatment had been found. This is the part you probably remember.
That's the one where the sparrow picked away at them.
Yeah, I want you to tell that story because it's beyond our comprehension in our fastidious
little medicine. Yeah, I mean, what the sparrow did was really act like a surgeon. Yeah. It debrided her wounds. It took away the dead, unhealthy tissue.
And he pecked it away, didn't he? Didn't he, Bernie?
Yeah. Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
And it's done, I mean, I could say it's done out of love, but again, it's that intuitive wisdom, the way they care for each other. You know, it's one animal for another animal.
But do
you know
remember
how many times we're sent emails with pictures of, tigers raising little pigs because their mother died? I mean, they don't eat the pig. They look at it, oh, this little baby, let's raise it. And they do.
And I think that is love. I think that's a tenderness, yeah. You know. But I just want to say the end of the sparrow story is the sparrow came when the woman was just about better. The sparrow came, do you remember that? And dropped a rose on the woman and then died.
He died. Yeah. What I remember is my reactions to these stories. We had a dog die, and there was a story called Wolfen in which a knight comes home from the war, knows his wife has had a baby, goes up to the nursery and sees it covered in blood and the crib turned over and his dog covered it in blood. So he kills his dog, thinking it's killed his baby. But when he lifts the crib up, there's a dead wolf and his living son. And he realized
wow.
He had killed the dog that saved his son's life.
Oh, my
gosh. So
he
builds a cairn, a pile of stones, as a memorial. And when one of our dogs died, on Father's Day, too, so I would never forget him, I built a cairn for him. And every day I'd go out and I'd pick up another stone and put it on his, monument. And then one morning, I never forget this, I went out and I'm looking, where's a stone? And I hear him say to me, why do you bring me stones every day? Why don't you bring me a flower? I mean, that shifted my whole, attitude. Instead of looking for a stone, I'm looking for beauty now.
Mm.
What he did for me,
you know?
And I knew it was a gift for me, not just for him. And the other word, so many stories about birds. A young woman was murdered, and I know the family, and she was very much into birds. And when her sister had an outdoor wedding, a bird landed in the tree and made such a racket that it disrupted the wedding. But everybody's reaction was, oh, it's your daughter, While she was telling up this story in a support group meeting, there was an open window to the room. Guess what flew in the window?
The bird?
And I said, we've been sitting in this room for 5 years. No bird even banged into the glass accidentally. And the bird flies in. And the other was at, because you hear lots of stories when you go to what's called compassionate friends, parents of children who have died.
Mm-hmm.
And one, to mention a bird again, the woman's driving down the parkway. Her son loved pigeons, and he was dead. And she hears her son's voice say, slow down, Mom. And a pigeon lands in the lane in front of her car.
Oh, my gosh.
So she steps on the brakes and slows down.
Hmm.
She said, when I went around the curve in the parkway, there was a sheet of ice and 20 cars piled up in an accident.
Oh, my gosh.
And I would have been in it if not for the pigeon and my son's voice.
Oh.
And then butterflies. A young boy dies. He loved butterflies. He studied them all the time. His room is filled with them, in frames and things hanging on the wall and all over the place. The father goes out for a walk, grieving his son's death, and a butterfly joins him, literally. And he said, I'm just walking along, this beautiful butterfly going with me. He said, I go home. I went up to my son's room. I want to know what kind of butterfly it was. It's so beautiful. It's a South American butterfly.
Oh.
What the hell is it doing in Connecticut?
Wow.
And we went to Kauai, the Hawaiian island of Kauai, years ago, to give an outdoor workshop. A patient of mine had died there, and she was there to resolve her relationship with her mother before she died, who had lived there. But we rescued a butterfly from a store we were shopping in. It was totally confused by all the lighting and just circling in the store. So again, I say we're always rescuing things. We have a reverence for life. My wife climbed up, put her hand up, and the butterfly landed on her hand. And then we went outside thinking it'll leave. But instead, it goes and sits on her shoulder, gets in the car, goes back to the hotel with us. We get out of the car. I'm always thinking it's going to leave now. It goes up to the hotel room. It spends the evening with us. And I wrote a story, which is entitled, You Can't Sleep with a Butterfly. On my website, if anybody wants to read it. But I said to my wife, really, you can't sleep with a butterfly. Get rid of it. We have to go to bed. And she went out and brushed it off her left shoulder and came back into the kitchen room. And I said, honey, look at your other shoulder. The butterfly flew over to her other shoulder and came back in.
Wow.
At that point, I really felt this is, you know, my patient spirit is with us. So I said to the butterfly, now I'm just talking to the butterfly like it's a person. Yeah. Okay, I'm taking you to the workshop tomorrow. I'm going to put you in a bag, lecture about the symbol of the butterfly's transformation, and then I'll open the bag and you can fly out. And I had no trouble. Just put the butterfly in the bag. We go to the workshop. I open the bag. It flies out and stayed over our heads until 5 o'clock in the evening when I was done with the workshop. Then it finally let us go. But,
wow.
You know, I say there's no way you can explain the stories that are in the book, you know, and events like that. You know, or even the dolphin, because you were talking, another person I knew who had cancer had friends who were therapists and used dolphins down in Florida to help kids with various, you know, deformities.
Autistic children and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So she went down to be with them. And they put her in the water. And she said the dolphins were incredible. They went over, touched her where the cancer was, but in a loving way.
Hmm.
And so instead of literally dying, she just responded to these dolphins and came home much healthier and better and lived for several years. And then one night I get a phone call. Yes, Marilyn, what is it? I'm ready to go. And you say it's easy to go once you're ready and you turn off the switch, but nothing's happening. I said, Marilyn, I've never had a phone call from a dolphin. And the parents called me the next morning and said, thank you. You know, that message is all she needed, and she died quietly that night.
Wow. But you know something, Bernie? I think there's a lot about you in this and your wife as well, because that ambiance of love that you have that drove you to change your whole medical practice is what really lets them be attracted. The animals are attracted to you, right?
Yeah. I've, you know, and even naming the animals, we had a cat named Miracle, named after a cat which told a lady how to treat her cancer. The cat said in the dream, my name is Miracle, and this is what you should do. Yeah, so we had a cat named Miracle. We had a cat named Penny because of the symbols, liberty, in God we trust, you know, Abe Lincoln reminding us of mortality. So even the names of all the animals. So, yeah, Dickens and Gabriel, the devil and the angel. Now I have hope.
I love that.
And you know, and rags and all.
But your kids have left home. How many animals do you have now?
We have 5, 4 cats and a dog now.
Oh, yeah.
But what was I thinking? Oh, yeah, a test question I often ask people. What would your answer be? You're walking down the street after a heavy rain, so there are a lot of worms on the pavement now.
Okay.
What do you do when you walk by them?
By the worms?
Yeah.
I think I just walk around them, or I usually marvel that they're there, but I don't pick them up. I don't enjoy them particularly.
No, well, I've been picking them up for God knows how long.
Really?
Yeah, because you go out in the morning with your dogs and walk, and, you know, you see all the worms. I would pick them up, just flip them back on the ground. And I thought I was neurotic. I mean, it was just like a compulsion I felt about saving their lives. And then I read what Albert Schweitzer had written, because he talked very much about a reverence for life. And he said, if you go out after a rainfall and there are worms in the street, pick them up and put them back on the earth.
Aww.
And if you see an insect in a puddle, give it a leaf to climb up on.
Aww.
When I read that, oh boy, it touched my heart and gave me therapy.
Aww.
You know, that you're not nuts, you just care.
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing I saw with our children. I wasn't, you know, using the animals as therapy, so to speak. But I saw the reverence for life they developed because they had all these creatures to care for. I mean, some of it was stressful for me because, you know, I'm a doctor. I'm supposed to save everybody's life. Yeah. You know, I said to them, I can't fix everything that happens to every animal. I'm laughing again because I've done cesarean sections on guinea pigs, you know. drained an abscess on a turtle. I mean, it's, you'd come home and they would tell me all these things that were happening. But it helped them, I know, very much to have a reverence for life. And I see it in their behavior. They are rescuing creatures still to this day.
Are any of them vets?
No, that's interesting. No.
Or doctors?
No. No, because, I mean, the doctor part I felt was due to my stress. They saw what I was going through and hadn't learned how to handle it, in the early years. So they didn't choose medicine. Some of them are, like therapists and you might say home health aides, and in terms of things like that, but not from the standpoint of going to medical school or making a living at some kind of health profession. But they just are always helping out and doing things in that way.
That's wonderful. That's a wonderful learning. Talk about horses, Bernie. Have you ever gone and worked with equine therapy?
Well, my problem was growing up in Brooklyn, in a big city, and never being on a horse.
Not a lot of horses in the middle of Brooklyn.
My wife grew up outside of New York in Westchester County, and she rode all the time.
Oh.
So when we started going together and got married, yeah, I would get on horses. But it scared me to be on a horse. And I'm laughing because we were down in Puerto Rico once, and the horses only understood Spanish. And boy, I was a disaster, because I didn't know what to tell the horse or ask it to do. But, I've learned, again, because I mentioned Amelia. I mean, she travels around the world training people to work with all animals, from horses to to elephants. I think, was the Queen of England with some of her horses.
Oh, wow.
They weren't doing well or something, because she knows what disease they have. Where it is, what's bothering them. And I even use that kind of thing to help get the animals in at night, because what Amelia is saying, and I think this is something everybody can learn, don't get frantic and start screaming your animal's name.
Right.
Because you don't connect that way. But when you quiet your mind, what I call the still pond, because of how it's used symbolically in many stories about animals, like the ugly duckling sees he's a swan looking at the still pond. It's a mirror. And so when you quiet your mind, then you connect with the animal. And I've been amazed how often that works for me when, one of them is out at night and I want them to come in, or I left the car door open and I don't know where the dog is because he's not in the car. But when I stop yelling in a parking lot and say, quiet your mind, suddenly I realize, oh, he's in Stop and Shop.
Oh, that's really
looking
good.
For me. And he was. I mean, you walk in and the security guard says, you looking for a dog? He could tell I had that look on my face. I did,
And, you've become again, more and more intuitive then, haven't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yes. But again, I can almost hear Amelia saying, Bernie, quiet your mind. And I would tell that to everybody. Quiet your mind. Talk to your animals. Tell them you love them. I brought one home from the shelter after a voice told me to go to the shelter. I wrote a book called Buddy's Candle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I saw that you wrote that book. It's a children's book, eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To help children. Well, to help with the loss of a loved one. So a child and his dog both develop cancer. And who's the teacher? Of course, the dog. Because he's having a nice day, not worrying about the future and everything else. And it does, he does die, and it helps people deal with the grief and understand that, if you keep crying, all you do is put out your loved one's celestial candle.
Hmm.
So it's to keep living and enjoying the life. But after I finished the book, literally, I hear voices. A voice said to me, go to the animal shelter. I went down the shelter, walked in, there was a dog sitting by the door, and I said, what's his name? They said, his name is Buddy. He's been here less than 15 minutes. I said, I'm here to take him home. And I knew I was sent there.
Aww.
And that's what I do. I wait for what I call messages from God. It's the consciousness to say, go to the animal shelter. And then I go whenever I hear that. And that's when I make the connections. There's always a dog that's been there for a day and has some connection to me, and I bring him home. But Buddy jumped out of the car when I stopped to get gas on the way home. And we had a hell of a time trying to catch him and bring him back and put him in the car. And so when I got home, I quieted my mind and I said to him, why did you do that? And he said, I belong to a couple. The husband's an alcoholic. And the wife would say, take the dog for a walk. But he never took me for a walk. He would lock me in the car while he went drinking. And then he'd abuse me. I don't want to be in cars.
Aww.
Well, 2 weeks later, after I promised him I would never treat him that way, I came out of the market and the car door was wide open. I must have hit the button as I pushed it in my pocket. And he was sitting in an open car.
Wow.
That taught me something.
Because
I know he
was
really abused. I mean, because, you know, as long as we had him for years, I would say, come here, and he'd back up. I mean, he was so used to being abused and beaten by the guy that if I'd say, hey, come here, buddy, he'd take a step or two back, and then he'd say, no, it's okay, you know, and then he'd walk up to me. But or if he picked up a broom, he would, you know, step away thinking, oh, I'm going to get hit with that. It took him a long time to realize that's not going to happen in this house and to be, you know, comfortable and not fearful of my words or my actions.
What's the name of the book again? I want to get it for my grandson.
Buddy's Candle.
Buddy's Candle.
Yeah.
Okay, because that sounds like a wonderful reflection book for kids. It's a good philosophy book, isn't it?
Yes, you can get it, you know, on my website. And
what about the one that had cancer in his partner, or his owner, or his child, or something? Both of them had cancer. Did they both pass?
I can't remember. Okay. But it's not, I mean, a veterinarian will tell you that too. It's not uncommon for the pet and the owner to develop the same type of cancer at the same time. Because again, a lot of it can have to do with emotions. It's not blaming people, you know, that it's your fault you get sick. But you're changing immune function, internal chemistry. So that's why I think the animals are trying to teach us, you know, enjoy the day. And the children do the same thing. I mean, they're not worrying about next year or 10 years from now. They're trying to have a nice day. And when you have a lot of nice days, that's why I started writing books, you notice people don't die when they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of them includes, this is from a letter, because it includes animals in it. This woman wrote and said she was told she had a couple of months to live.
Okay.
And up until then, she wouldn't buy that from her doctor. But she said, I now feel that he's right. To enjoy, you know, my last few months, I bought a dog and I put in a backyard wildlife habitat and I laughed more and took some vitamins.
I
took vitamins. And her letter ends with, I didn't die, and now I'm so busy I'm killing myself. Help, where do I go from here? You see, those are not...
What was your answer? Where does she go from there?
Oh, I told her to take a nap. But, you know, but it's not an accident. See, it's not a spontaneous remission. She has induced self-healing through the laughter and the relationships and the love. I mean, there are a lot of times families, one lady I remember, she had 12 cats. Her family said, we can't even go into her house. I mean, what it smells like. And then she develops cancer. And they said, we're going to get rid of the cats, clean the house. I said, no. They look at me, what do you mean no? I said, you do not get rid of those cats. You get rid of the cats, your mother's dead. I said, you go and clean the house. And you tell your mother, you can't find anyone to take 12 cats. She can't die then.
Oh,
and the family would look at me like, wow, you know, but they did it. They went home and cleaned. And of course she, you know, had to keep living. I mean, women do that for their children, for their pets. You know, I can't die till you're all married and out of the house. I mean, they will say these things in the office. Whereas again, the men are more into thinking. If I can't work, what's the point of living?
Right.
That's why the pets help the guys soften up too. You know, and develop relationships with other living things and stop thinking all of the time.
I think there's something that you have that I think that penetrates everyone you work with, which is respect for life. you know, there's a lot more respect for one. Like when you said that about the man, I go, then you help him respect his life. Yeah.
You're saying a lot of really important things, because I don't remember where all these things come to me, but the biblical line, I place before you life and death, good and evil, choose life. But it was the definition of life. See, it's not about something selfish, you know, for yourself. To me, the definition of choosing life is, what is life enhancing for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
See? So when you choose to be life enhancing, whether it's pets, family, clients, you know, coworkers, anything, when you're out there improving life for everyone, you benefit as well as everyone else. And then a lot of wonderful things happen.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about, this is kind of a jump shift here, but I'm just thinking about, that's an old bridge line if you ever played bridge. But anyway, I'm thinking about aging. I'm going, I think there's a lot in what you're talking about and the influence on people who are getting older, because that's a big subject, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, I used to take, especially our cat Miracle, because from the time she was a kitten, I took her everywhere. A lot of times I just tuck her in my sleeve.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, when I say everywhere, I mean it literally, everywhere. But when you would take her into a nursing home, let's say, and take her out and put her in somebody's lap, you would see them come alive. You know, Alzheimer's, all kinds of problems. Suddenly life would appear in their eyes. You know what I mean? They were oriented and loving and relating to this beautiful little creature. And it really impressed me what a wonderful effect she had on everyone. And I take our dogs, and I talked about that dog Buddy. I mean, he died this year. But
he did. Was he old? By this time?
Well, a teenager. You know, I've adopted them, so nobody really knows how old they are.
Mm-hmm.
But Miracle, for instance, lived to 20, and I think would be alive today, but she had a reaction to some drug because she became hyperthyroid and received medication for it and reacted to that. But where was I? Oh, yeah, it has support groups, cancer support groups. The dog, Furphy, I laugh because he had his own ego. You know, you take him into a room full of people and he would take a nap. He didn't care, you know, about giving out therapy. But I'll tell you one story that was very therapeutic. But Buddy would walk around the room.
Okay.
And I could tell from him who's doing well and who wasn't. I know that sounds crazy, but he would walk up to people and give those who weren't doing well some love.
Aww.
And others, he would like back in and say, okay, pet me, you're doing fine. And I would tell some of the people when he would walk up to them and look up at them, and I could hear him saying to me, this guy's really doing very well. And I would say that. But we were having a weekend workshop, and one man came late, and he doesn't know the dog's in the room. And he starts telling his story, because as I said, you know, we're all done introducing ourselves, or why don't you say why you're here, what you're dealing with. And he starts telling his tragic story about cancer. And he hears snoring while he's talking. And he said, what the hell's the matter with all you people? You're totally insensitive. You're falling asleep while I'm telling you about my life being, you know, he went on screaming at everybody. I couldn't quiet him down. You know, I'm waving my hands. And then everybody else in the room just started pointing under my chair. And who was lying there? Furphy, fast asleep, snoring. Well, when the guy realized it's the dog that was snoring, that, I think, was the best therapy he's ever had for his cancer.
Did he laugh?
He went from this tragic guy to burst out laughing, and the whole day became joyful, you know, after that, because of this crazy dog who's snoring. Yeah.
Wow. I bet you have a lot of stories of people who just did, like when you use the term spontaneous remission, it isn't really spontaneous remission, isn't it? It's sort of like activating our joie de vivre or activating.
Yeah. That's why I use the term self-induced.
Yeah.
Solzhenitsyn in his book Cancer War, again, used an animal symbol, a rainbow-colored butterfly flooded out of the book when one of the men was reading about self-induced healing cases.
Wow.
But again, you see, it's that intuitive wisdom, the rainbow, your life in order, the butterfly transformation. So when people change and do those things, yeah, And that's why I say, really, what would Lassie do? You know, I mean, to be in touch with your feelings, to not just live in your head thinking all the time, but to be in touch with those feelings.
Did you grow up that way, Bernie? Were you always in touch with your feelings, or did you have to break into it?
I always felt connected to animals as a child.
Oh, I see.
My parents, you know, living in Brooklyn, New York, my parents were not into animals. Mm. So I had a dog for about a week. I had some little chickens for a while because my grandfather, was into poultry and things. So I would sometimes have little chicks that I took care of. But we got a dog because I really wanted one. And a week later, my folks are telling me, oh, he has mange, he has a disease, you have to take him back. I knew they were lying, but, I mean, I couldn't get them to keep him. And the funniest thing that I always remember is when my mother wouldn't take him out for a walk or anything, you know, when I was at school, she would put his harness on and lower him out to the first floor window down to the ground. And then he would run out and pee, and then she'd, you know, haul him back in. And
oh, my gosh, how
little
funny.
Little fox terrier, you know, and maybe they were 8 feet up. I mean, it wasn't dangerous for the dog. But that's why, you know, she wasn't attached to all these creatures. So, you know, if you wanted a fish in a tank, fine, but nothing furry. And I would guess some of it also had to do with keeping the house clean and, you know, her personality. But that's why, as I said, that dog, Furphy, when he adopted me at the shelter and I brought him home, my wife, Bobby, said, look, I have enough little pieces of fur, which she called them, enough Furphies all over the house. I don't need any more. So I named him Furphy. Then she left and he became a family member.
She left animals too, or she got used to them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she had dogs when she was a kid. And yeah, as a matter of fact, you see, once she and I got married, then our home became a place for animals because she taught school and was in the last room in the building. She had kindergarten. You know, it's like the kids, you know, as you went into the building, the grades went up. But so she was in the last room in the building. And sometimes you'd see stray cats go by and she'd let them in and bring them home. And I even neutered some of them at medical school, you know, and did their surgery and then brought them home. And so we had pets from day one. And when I would try to study as a medical student, they would climb in my books, you know, because I was up late at night reading. And they would climb in and sleep on the book, and I would have to push them off in order to study, and usually I would fall asleep with them after a while.
That's funny. I've had cats like that, too. They love to climb all over you. But, well, you've made huge changes all the way through your whole medical career. Has that been, that's just a natural flow for you? Some of it must have been rather difficult,
You know, we're seeing more of this being written now.
Right.
About what doctors don't learn and don't, you know, share, what's stored within them and how much damage it's doing to doctors.
Right.
You know, that we're treating diseases and looking at computers, not talking to people. And I became a doctor because I cared about people. Mm-hmm. And I realized I wasn't trained to care for people. And I know that sounds crazy. But as a matter of fact, it's interesting, I had forgotten, I don't think I mentioned in the book, I was going to retire from surgery and become a veterinarian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really was thinking of it seriously because I couldn't take the pain, you know, the loss. Why did God make a world like this? I mean, a lot of questions that aren't discussed in medical school. You know, why I got into spiritual things, because I wanted answers to life and why kids would have cancer. I did a lot of children's surgery. Where was I now? Oh, yeah, I had a veterinarian who was my patient. So when he came into the office, I said to him, after taking care of him, I said, I want you to help me. He said, what are you talking about? I said, I want to go to veterinary school. I can't take being a doctor. It's too painful. You know, all the things that happen to people. So I think I can handle the, you know, animals better. And I'd like you to help me get into medical school, you know, and apply. And he said, don't. I said, what do you mean, don't?
Don't?
Yeah. He said, Bernie, come here. And he pointed out to the waiting room. He said, people bring the animals in. You need to learn to deal with people.
Right.
It's not about animals. It's the people. And boy, that helped me a lot.
Wow. Well, also, you're so sensitive, and what you have helped so many people get their heads out of that medical thing.
You know, I learned from the people and the animals. You know, I'd let them be my teachers. And I think that I always say to people, you know, whether you want a good veterinarian, doctor, or plumber, if you ask them, are you criticized by the people you work with, the people you work for, and your family? And the best in all fields say, yeah, I'm criticized. Why? Because they're learning from their mistakes. You know what I mean? They don't make excuses. You see, you know, it's not the veterinarian saying, oh, your dog died because you didn't feed it the right food or you didn't get it. You know, they will learn from it. And as a surgeon, too, it's not me blaming my patients. But if they said to me, you know, you didn't listen to me when I was in the office, I'd say, all right, tell me again. What is it that I didn't hear, that I wasn't listening? You know, what were my problems? And they would tell me, and we kept up the relationship because they knew I cared and I listened.
Wow.
And the nurses are the ones who explained that to me. They said, yeah, we don't talk to the doctors who always make excuses because there's no point in telling them, you know, coaching them. It's not saying you're a bad doctor, but what's a better way of doing that so the patient feels good about it?
And we have to sign off, unfortunately, but you probably don't remember, Bernie, but we've spoken several times, and
I
just enjoy your spirit, and I enjoy that you've chipped off a whole bunch of things that were kind of freezing understanding of people and animals. You've really made us all, I don't know, aware of things in a loving way, and I appreciate you so much.
It's helping, I think, each other, you know, choosing life and I always say love is the answer, whatever your problem is.
Wow. And so that's the evolution of our species, maybe, huh?
Yeah. And you see it with the animals, too. When they're ready to go, they don't feel guilty about dying. And, you know, the dog, Furphy, also died. And but he looked fine at night. I went to bed, came into the kitchen, and he was lying there dead. And I knew that he didn't want to upset me. You know, he just went and laid down. It was time for him to go. And I'd done a lot to keep him, you know, kicking with all kinds of supplements and holistic medicine and everything else that I've learned from people. But when he got tired, he just went in the other room and said, okay. And as a matter of fact, the book ends. Do you have a minute for this?
Yeah, I do.
Because the book ends with that story about Furphy.
Oh, wonderful. Let me see. I'm flipping through.
You see, a man is in the office and says, what do you know about death? And I said, I don't know anything about the other side. You know, I'm here. What can I know? And the guy said, you're a spiritual fella. I thought you could help me. You could teach me about death and what I'm going to face. I said, I really don't know. And then we heard scratching at the door. And I opened the door, and in runs Furphy. And I said to the guy, did you see that? He said, what? I said, this dog has never been in this office before. But when he heard his master's voice saying, come in, he came in. No fear, no concerns, no worry. And that's what I really shared with that man. When you have that faith, you know, in your master, your God, whatever you want to call it, you don't worry about it going through the door.
I love
that. And a few days after that, Furphy died.
Wow. That's a wonderful way to end the book.
Thank
and this
you.
Is Bernie's Love Animals and Miracles by Bernie Siegel. And thank you so much for elevating us, lifting us. Yeah.
Look for coaches is what I always tell people. Because if you have the talent, they'll bring it out in you.
Right on.
Thanks.
Animals are coaches too, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you, dear.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.